We're live.
To everyone who is watching online, we are coming back in just a second. We're waiting on two members to come back up, and then we will begin our second part of our agenda, which is a discussion of a number of projects throughout the city. To those of you who asked for these items to be put on the agenda, I assume that we'll have as extensive a discussion on each of these as is appropriate and necessary. But if you put it on the agenda, you're responsible for teeing it up. And so we'll go forth from there. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have an executive session scheduled. So we'll just move forward through these items and click them off and then go until we have a motion to go into executive session. So without any further ado, we will turn it over to Council Member Fuller for sweet gum tree removal.
Actually, we somewhat addressed this when we were considering sidewalks, but this comes from a number of sources. I'll make this slightly quick by telling a short story about myself. When I had my second knee replacement, physical therapist came out. Sweet gum tree had pushed up the sidewalk. She trips over the sidewalk, went full blown out in front. That was the last time I saw her. That was her first visit with me. And then the next incident is the lady that the couple that graciously came in and asked us to remove the sweet gum tree. And I've had this talk also with our a forester, and I was liaison for a short time with the urban forestry. And we know that sweet gums are a bane of existence. But they not only provide a hazard with sidewalk going up and down and all of the sweet gums. So that couple persisted, and we, as a city, went out and removed the tree. I was told that it was a dead tree, but dead trees don't produce sweet gums. Anyway. Then I've had in our ward, we've had Christ the King has a sweet gum. The chairman of the board, who also is on Yosidian Bloom, has asked that we consider removing that tree. Arborist went out, looked at it, and said we don't remove healthy trees. Well, the tree is so healthy, they're complaining that it is a hazard to people walking down the sidewalk. And I'm just gonna kind of ask us to take a look at down the road, looking at a policy. And the mayor and I were received a email because the resident who happens to live in Ward 1 brought out the fact that she fell and broke her toe falling on sweet gum balls. And she's a good friend of my wife and I. She brought to my attention a program that went on in Springfield, Illinois, over this very topic. And they developed a program of if the tree was removed, would the resident, it was something to the effect, the resident would replace the tree at a fee of $250. And I'm told by our arborist that we have a huge number of sweet gum trees. But I'd like for us to consider this kind of concept, the fact that it's not just a hazard to the public, it's causing us to have to replace sidewalks, that sort of thing. And whoever decided this is a wonderful shade tree should be executed, but that's another story. So it's not that it's self-serving, but we're going to continue. I just had the sidewalk replaced in front of my house because of the sweet gum tree. And I'm told that within 5 years, that piece of sidewalk's going to be all plowed up again because of the roots and the development. So maybe look down the road at a way of getting rid of these with some, if we really have people that feel like it's a hazard, like a business or a church, that sort of thing, that we could consider a program of removal. Yeah, I know they're healthy trees. They're too healthy. And
Just
just that's my request.
are you asking anything of us or anyone else?
I'm asking that to be considered as a new policy down the road, or consider it as something in our urban forestry that we could consider. And I know that the going rate to remove a healthy tree right now is exorbitant, in the neighborhood of $2,000 to $3,000, yada yada yada. But my subdivision just laid out $500 to replace a slab of sidewalk that we're going to have to replace in 5 years. To say nothing of the medical aspects of, I don't want liability issue, I think, are huge here and places that are brought to our attention.
You want us to reply?
Aramir, Councilmember Fuller, I think once we have a new Parks and Recreation director on board, having that individual take a look at all of the projects that are included within the work plan, identifying when he or she believes that they would be able to pick up this project, which, as you know, will include working with the Forestry Commission. So it's twofold. One is what's a policy that we can recommend to you for the replacement, I will say, of sweet gums because they are throughout the entire community. There are a lot of sweet gum balls that are out there as well, but I don't think most people would complain about having it removed from their yard because they give the mowers a lot of challenges when they mow over them. But long story short, identifying a time period, what's a reasonable policy, incorporating the Forestry Commission into that. So that would be my suggestion for how to move forward with it.
And this is not a criticism of Mr. Kaiser and the Forestry Commission. I think they do a great job. And I know he has a complete inventory. He knows where all of these are at. We've had this discussion. And thank you.
McMahon.
Just to dovetail with that, if we then looked at the emerald ash borer eradication that we had funded and its timeline, see where we are on that. If we deemed gumballs as much of a hazard as emerald ash borer, then would it just be an extension of that project and funding just over a longer period of time? So it wouldn't necessarily be a new setup, but that's just a thought.
Okay, we're good on this one.
Mayor,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say there was also a question that was raised by Councilmember Brenner regarding tree plan, and I was thinking perhaps we could just dovetail this into it. You had asked about the city creating a tree plan program, and I just wanted to know if you had other thoughts regarding what type of program are you interested in the city having?
I'm not sure that was my
Okay. I'm scratching my head too.
A tree plant program. Huh? Oh, Pershing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Now I know what it was. So okay, thank you. Steve got me in the right direction here. Okay, so I know what that was. That was about that we put this is particularly for Pershing replacement trees on Pershing that we asked the forestry department to survey where we've lost trees, what appropriate trees would be there, and how we create a future canopy again on that boulevard and make sure the public sees that because I think that is an incredible concern for the constituents with the loss of trees. So it was very specific to Pershing. I'm sorry. That's why I got really confused. Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Brenner, I just want to make sure that the community understands that the ones that were taken down as a because of this project are scheduled for replacement.
I'm aware of that.
Okay.
And I think this is more of a there were a lot of worries and complaint, or not worries, There were a lot of complaints about the trees coming down, but there were a lot of worries that when we did a new plan for the trees, that they would be small, like a dogwood, you know, or a crabapple, rather than canopy trees. And so I think to help the community see, because I think Mr. Kaiser has some ideas on how to create canopy with it without disturbing the new sidewalks and everything. If we had the plan published, that would be a nice way to kind of quiet that.
So. Communication, communication, communication. Okay, one down. We've got a lot to go, folks. Olive Corridor, Councilmember Smotherson, Fuller, Brenner.
I will start this off by allowing Councilmember Brenner to start, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, my main part of the Olive Corridor, again, and we've already kind of hit this a little bit earlier, is just the walkability of it and the crossability of it, and how we as we plan things with whether it's a new development or we're working with the state or the county on the road, how we plan things so that we can improve that. One additional, besides the crosswalks that we talked about earlier, one additional thing that was brought to my attention was at the crossings at the new development, a man with a disability, a blind man, was let out at the bus stop and wanted to get to the AT&T store. And the bus stop, I think it's right across from Old Bonham. It's right there, or McKnight, I'm sorry. McKnight. He couldn't get into the project very easily from that corner. You have to go all the way down the street on the sidewalk, then down here, and then you have to cross the street and come all the way around like this. There was no, just pathway from the sidewalk into the development. And so there was a missed opportunity that I'm making that more walkable and easier to access for pedestrians. So that's just another example. But again, getting across Olive is very difficult in a number of spots, and that's what I worry about the most. So.
I'm back on the crosswalks. I think we have to have a stronger discussion with the state in putting some metered crosswalks at very systematically down the line, starting all the way down by the rec center, the commons. Another huge location is at the crest of Olive, just beyond North and South, and then subsequently further down, down by my favorite topic, Seafood City, because we have some daycare, adult daycare centers down there. Again, this handicap crossing is a real issue. People come tearing down Olive. It is incredible. Somewhere down the road, I'd like to have a further discussion about what was considered the second or third phase of the marketed of Olive project in developing financially the corridor as we go down. And we've got some businesses out there that I know we can't dictate what businesses go in, but how they run their business and some of the access to those businesses, we've really got to revise. Or we're going to have some massive traffic problems up there. Some of the little stores, particularly in the 8300 block, they don't have parking out in front, but they've paved in front. Cars park in there, back out onto Olive. It's ridiculous. So that's...
Thank you. I will just add to what his discussion, and I've talked about this before. The problem that you have in the 82 and 8300 blocks of Olive is that a lot of those stores actually do have parking right in the front of the store, and the traffic literally, and you have traffic and you have cars that are literally backing out when you have backing out into Olive and you have cars going 35, 40 and 45 miles an hour down Olive. And so that is a problem. But the one thing that I did want to mention, because I've talked about the crosswalks, is that I would really like the city to consider, and we've talked about this before, to create a service road behind the 8200 block of Olive and those stores like Chung Hwa's, Lulu's, and I think the car wash is vacant right now. And the reason I say that is because what's happening at Chung Hwa's, again, I'm repeating, is that you have cars that will come out of their parking lot, and that is a popular Chinese restaurant. You have cars that come out of their parking lot and drive illegally down Olive going westbound in the eastbound lane, just so that they can get over to the eastbound side of Olive. And I've literally witnessed this, where they'll come out of there and drive down Olive going west, going east, going westbound in the eastbound lane. So it's and the actual solution to that was to actually have the parking lots behind Chung Hwa and Lulu's have those parking lots connected in the back. But I don't know that we're going to be able to get the owners to do that themselves. What would solve the problem is to create a service road behind those businesses, so that, and because there is a service road, but that is back there, it's just that we need to complete it so that they can actually travel down that service road in the back and not have to make those illegal turns on Olive. And that's pretty much the only thing that I wanted to address. Thank you.
But I guess my question on the service road is it actually already a service road there, or you're asking us to buy the land from someone to then complete a service road?
Well, I think that one of the things that we could actually look at is extending. It's actually Crixdale, but right behind where we have the 8400 block of Olive. If you go down to Crixdale on that south side, you'll see there is a service road back there. And all I'm saying is that I just would like us to consider extending that behind Chung Hwa's and Lulu's. And
I get that. But when you say extending, I'm just asking if we're extending.
Yes.
Are we taking someone's land and buying it to create the service road?
Those businesses that are back there. That's it. I don't know if we can make a deal with them or how we would do that. Just to look in it. And I'm not sure again. Yeah. But I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're asking. But those businesses own the property, I believe.
No, I get that. Most of the time, they may own the property, but they also want us to pay for the property to put in a service road to help them out.
I got you.
Okay. That may be a more expensive solution than we're thinking. But there also may be other solutions too. I think you all bring up a point that we all understand. You know, we have issues with dealing with the county on Del Mar, and then when you take it to the Olive level, you go up, you ratchet the heat up a little bit more because you're dealing with the state level. I don't know that there's an answer to this. I'm wondering whether the crosswalks would be easier or harder, because I have a feeling most of the state roads don't have the state roads like Manchester and like Lindbergh do not have intermittent crosswalks. I mean, like none. And so I'm trying to determine how receptive the state's going to be to any crosswalks that are not already at a light. Because if you look at the other state-owned thoroughfares that are designed to move people along, I'm just kind of scratching my head as to where there are intermittent crosswalks to help out with walkability. Not that it's not a good idea. It's just kind of interesting to see how that would move forward. Ms. Brenner.
Thank you, Mayor. I do want to suggest that perhaps looking at I feel like Manchester and Lindbergh might have higher traffic flows.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yep.
And that might be our argument, that we have a state road, particularly past maybe Hanley, you know,
to the east.
Yeah. That there may be some traffic calming things that could happen because of the fast speed and all that. But, that piece of it, but that wouldn't entail asking them to do a traffic study basically for volume. So
Councilmember Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Is Page is state owned or state maintained, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have, if you go west of North and South to, well, to the next street, which I think is that small street by Pinnacle Imports, there's intermittent crosswalks there because it's such a long stretch. So I think we may be able to leverage, to your point, some degree of precedent with Page and how that is set up. In terms of the service road, I do wonder if some sort of easement relationship is an option. I don't know, but I do understand the need. If we had to pay, that could be challenging, but I don't know if an easement would
work. The easement's still got to be paid for. That's the only thing. Unless I think there's very few of them who are going to contribute, but I like the idea. I'm a little worried. The only thing I'd say to you guys on the crosswalks is, on the Olive in particular, I don't think a crosswalk's going to do us much good unless it's got the lights that force people to stop, because I, for one, do not intend to cross Olive in a crosswalk just because it's got a crosswalk, unless I know that someone's going to really stop. So I think there's a little, this can't be the first time this has come up. So I'm sure that someone has addressed this, and hopefully we can get some insight from the state on this. Dennis, do you have more?
Just a quick address to Councilman Smotherson. This is when I was on Traffic Commission, so this would be maybe 3 years ago. There was a discussion that was passed up the line about creating an extension behind and coming out by 82nd or 84th Street that would not require purchase of anybody's property. It's that side issue comes out by the it goes behind Lulu's and then comes up behind the attorney. There's a stoplight there.
Yeah.
Right by 7-Eleven. That was passed by Traffic Commission about 3 years ago. We might want to look at that. That's all.
All right, let's continue going forward. I believe Councilmember Thiemann, student work with departments.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. This is a student project, an educational project that actually comes out of the Seniors Commission, really. And I suppose I'm looking for advice and about how to go forward with this. Excuse me. I'm very conscious that I'm speaking before civil servants today because this is about educating people about the civil service. Dr. Samuel Martin from the University City High School made this proposal that we do two kinds of, I guess you'd say, work study sorts of projects with students. One, a job shadowing opportunity, introducing students to jobs in the civil servants on civil service on a day in the life kind of role. That is to say, they would shadow somebody doing this job or that job. And the other one he proposed was what he calls micro internships, where this would be probably a summer project where somebody would have a deeper skilled center experience. This is what he's proposing. I'm very conscious of the fact that civil service, which I consider, frankly, that we need to renew the sense of the attractiveness of having this job in the civil service, and frankly, to renew respect and nobility for the civil service that has been lacking recently, and really going back a number of years. And it seems to me that getting students to either shadow somebody doing this job or that job, or a summer internship, would do one of two things: either make it so attractive they would want to do it, or give somebody knowledge simply of what it is to be a civil servant and what that job is like, rather than relying on the kind of cliches we so often see, many of which are negative today. And so that's the proposal, and I'm open to suggestions on how to go from here. I do know that they are, through Dr. Martin, more than willing to implement something.
Mr. Rhodes?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember, if it's acceptable to the council, the best approach, I believe, to advancing that type of project is to forward the information along to Chris and have him do some outreach and some research with the departments to see how could we craft a program for the city, whether that works for a university city.
And I have to say, I've done this kind of thing before, but with literary organizations, but I'd be more than willing to, as would Dr. Martin, be more than willing to work with you as closely as it needs to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Smotherson, did we already take care of Missouri Blue Shields? Or
yes, sir, we did.
We are moving along. All right. Councilmember Brenner.
Okay, so I would just like to talk to the council a little bit more about the role of council liaisons. And for instance, one thing I noticed, particularly when I first came onto council, was there were a couple of things that didn't get followed up that was supposed to go to council. For instance, the big one was the CALIP funds that we are, you know, we've been looking at and trying to navigate now. And then also there was a little confusion about when forestry was scheduled for the work session. So my question to the council is, as the liaison, what do we see as our role and how much is part of our responsibility making sure that the commission's work comes to the council, or is that the staff's responsibility? Just kind of clarifying that. That's the question. Yeah. And I think some commissions seem to flow better than others. I've been noticing that also. So anyway, just a discussion question.
I do think, at least historically, a large number of the items that come through commissions, once they've been to the commission, they then move back through staff and then come through the city manager as to when it's going to come on to the a docket or the agenda. And then usually anyone correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just going from history here. And if something has not moved forward in a timely manner, then normally the liaison would go back and say, by the way, we worked on this 2 months ago. Where is this? Normally, I would think that the city manager or whomever has a reason for why it's not come on the agenda. But I do think it's an appropriate role for the liaison to be following up. I do think also that we all make of the liaison role almost what you as a person or professional want to do. I mean, in my particular case, I'm probably far more engaged in the EDRST and the LSBD than I even like to be, but I'm in it and I've been in it for a while, and the mayor is the only one who can be on it. So that kind of pushes you that way. You guys rotate around somewhat. And also, frankly, depending on which commission you're on, you've got a heavier workflow or you've got a lighter workflow. The liaison to the planning commission during Costco, those are long hours, really long hours. Now I'm not sure as much as everyone's got the long hours on as many commissions. I think that the pension board is probably going to take on a life of its own as we move through more things. And then the pension board has so many outsiders that have to be considered as they make decisions as well. If there is a way that people would rather streamline those roles, we can. I think the limitation on it is that all seven of us have different ways of doing things, and we rotate these positions around. But I know Wayne, Steve, everybody, we've all been on here a long time. I'm not what other advice and counsel you have for to answer Councilmember Brenner's question. And I'm not sure who had their light on first. I'm going to go with Councilmember Team, and then we'll swing over.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Mayor. I guess, well, you're saying it is for us to make. And I have seen in the times that I've been on, well, three different commissions, that it seems that the people that I observed go from a role that is virtually passive. And I mean, I've seen at least one case, you know, somebody who rarely said anything, to times when people really inject themselves into the meeting. And I certainly personally have gone back and forth with that too. And I just don't know, you know, it's not like when I was teaching that I could just go and observe somebody else, you know, in another classroom. and see how they do it. And I guess I need some clarification. You know, how much do I inject myself into it? Or is it for me to simply determine, you know, that these people need a little more help than these people over here, whatever?
Well, I think it is for you, clearly for you to determine, because that's kind of our role, is that when there's a problem, we do try to fix it. I have tried to make sure, and I think Brooke would probably be the one to help me if I'm wrong on this one, but we've tried to make sure on EDRST that we let folks know that we think you can, if you want to pass this is okay, but I don't think council would have the votes to pass this. And then that tends to slow things down, because with EDRST, with the amount of money that flows through there and people making requests, I try to say to either the applicant or even some of the EDRST members, you know, you do realize that council has the final say. And I think I've got a pretty good handle on where the votes would be. And I can't see us going that way. Do you want to tweak it here? And that is something that probably needs to happen. And in your case, I know that you've had some very active commissions lately, and probably at times the volunteers that we have in the commissions probably need a little bit of help or a little bit of guidance as far as how to run a meeting and move things through. I was told at the break that I move things through rather quickly, I was told. So, I mean, my point in saying that everybody has different strengths and weaknesses. Normally, and I know we have one commission member in the audience, I think normally the commission members would tell you if you're interjecting yourself too much. I tend to think the seasoned ones would, and most of the people we have on commissions now are pretty seasoned. I think we'd like to get more people to volunteer. John, that was a long winded answer on my part. I apologize, but Stacy,
thank you, Mayor Crow. I think what might be helpful, and clearly I'm in a mode of reflection, is my time on the council is dwindling, to have some sort of job description, for lack of a better term. Just this is what a council liaison does, and I think it's the wisdom of this council. Many folks here are seasoned to draft that. Now, obviously, there's going to be the opportunity for folks to bring their own skill set and knowledge and style to the role of liaison. But I think if we had kind of some standard parameters, this is kind of what you do, I think that might present a nice framing, not just for those who are in the seats today, but those who will occupy the seats tomorrow.
Maybe we could add a little part to the city clerk's orientation of new council members, and just have a suggestion that maybe the new council members not only make it part of the orientation, but have them reach out to some of us old folks and just give us the rules of the road. But I mean, as Wayne or John in particular could say, both of those two have been more engaged with arts and letters than probably the rest of us would be if we were the liaison to arts and letters, because they've been involved in arts and letters in different ways for a long, long time. And if the rest of us are on it, we'd probably take a little bit of a different tack because we have not been as engaged so long. So it really does come back still to this idea of there's a unique nature here, because that's why we have everybody pick their choices, you know, so that we kind of get you to where you are interested. Boyne.
Oh, thank you, Mayor. What I wanted to just simply say is that I think this has been mentioned already. The way that I look at the liaison role is to help that committee or commission and give guidance to them if they run into issues and problems, but also to clarify things. And you know, because we're on the council and have some knowledge of how the process works. But it is written, just to answer to, I think, what Stacy mentioned, is that it is mentioned in the book. What's the name of the book? I mean, what's the book? It is in there. Yes. But the one thing that I actually do follow, and it's probably the last sentence on that line about liaison, is that we shouldn't be influential. We should try not to be influential to the commission, because again, they're volunteers and they are there to give their opinions and make the recommendations that they want to make. And we just have to simply be careful about being influential in how they do that process. So that's it. That's what.
Anything else on this topic? Ms. Brenner.
So there is something written already.
It's brief.
Can we take Stacy's idea and like we just, I mean, I'd be willing to volunteer to like sit down and we can just write down some things and bring it to the council and see if they agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Councilmember Fuller.
This is very quick. I just, since most of the current buyouts are in Ward 2, I'm kind of wanting to sit on top of this buyout process. I feel distressed for those folks, and I feel their urgency to move on with their lives. And I'm just kind of wondering, and I don't want to cross any FEMA lines here, but could we have kind of a routine report as to, I don't know if we need to name specific addresses, but as that process goes along, where each of those properties are in the buyout process? And that's all I'm asking.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Fuller, absolutely. We should be able to present to you, likely on a quarterly basis, what the status of that project is.
I guess I would actually follow up in that. Can anyone tell us anything new about it? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out. We have the folks come every month, which I actually do respect them very much for doing so. And and by the way, this is not towards any of us. This is like a snail's pace, which it really is truly a snail's pace. But is there anything happening?
Yes, Honorable Mayor. So we just concluded the bid process for the title services and the appraisal services. That should be coming to you all on your December agenda for approval. Once those are approved, then we will work with those consultants to start appraising the properties and then doing title searches to make sure the titles are clear. So slow progress, but progress. Yes. And we are sending out a weekly report to, I think, Becky Alvin, who is unfortunately not here with us today, sends out a weekly report to the members that are listed on the, I guess, the flood buyout list. So she is sending out a weekly update, which we do share with the city manager as well.
May I ask, just as a can the council members from at least the second ward, if not more, be included on the weekly update? I mean, I just think that we it's clear that we want to know because we ask about this pretty regularly. I would actually push even further and say that I appreciate that's coming on the December agenda. I get that. But then can you give me an idea of what the timeline is that we're giving the title company and the appraisers for when they need to be concluded?
I cannot right now, but I'm sure Becky has that information. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. She just wasn't able to be here today.
I just think that that you're probably going to see us getting more and more anxious. So we're probably going to start asking more questions. So the more we can think ahead and even just provide the information before we ask would be good. But we recognize that a lot of this is beyond your control. Truly recognize that. But am I right, though, to my colleagues from the second ward, at a minimum, you'd like to be on the weekly update list?
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe my other question is I don't want to be too pushy about this, but can on the part of the city, I would really appreciate as pushy as you could be with the title companies to move this along.
Of course. Again, right now the ball is in our court. We have two contracts that we need to review before we bring to you all for final approval.
And that's for the apartment complex too, or is that a different part? The Havner Court.
It does include that one. They have a separate, I believe it's a separate contract or a separate bid process, but all of it was done together. Okay. So okay. Everything will come to you all in December.
Councilmember Thiemann.
Honorable Mayor, I just want to ever so briefly say I'm in complete agreement with this, and I would deeply appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brooke. Next one is Delmar Loop. Looks like I get to throw out the first pitch. I think I can probably speak for the city manager that we're probably more involved in the Delmar Loop and the LSPD than we've been in a really long time. Though I do think we have a very dedicated group of folks, the business owners who are working on the LSPD board. just very briefly, we're working through the transition, and some of you may not recall that years ago the LSBD would have a meeting once a month at Blueberry Hill with coffee, and one of the members, Joe Edwards, would host it, coffee, speak for an hour. There'd be a little bit of business. Everybody got caught up, and everybody went away. That changed over the years. COVID definitely changed it. And then, as you know, Mr. Edwards sold most of his land to WashU. And so the LSBD is definitely a different group of people. There's a small group that would probably like it to go back to the coffee hour group, but I don't know that that's probably where it goes. I think that if anything, the folks who are most involved in LSBD would even like the LSBD board to be smaller rather than larger, so they can move along a little bit more quickly and get things done. We as a city, as you know, have over the years had to, we have lent money to the LSBD. We've given them expertise and things like that. I think that part of this process has now worked its way through that. I think they're on a much better financial footing. At the same point in time, I think all of you guys recognize, and those who are watching, that the nature of the loop has changed and will continue to change, and particularly with the world of retail changing. A couple of things to note still for everybody is that, you know, as we're talking about what an owner does with their land, we really can't control the rents in the loop, and there still is a pretty big gap between what the landlords in the loop are wanting to receive and what tenants are wanting to pay. A good example would really be the section of three buildings that are all together, I think owned by one person, where Blue Ocean and then the two new Asian restaurants are. That is a building where anyone who's moving into that building is going to do the rehab themselves as part of their lease. So you've got some landlords who aren't wanting to put more money into their properties, and then so that they bring in a tenant. That necessitates, by the way, that you're going to have a lot more businesses that don't look like the businesses that used to be there, that were more mom and pop. So there's getting to be a little bit more of a, I own franchises, so I'll say franchise type look in the loop. And that's always been a challenge. So we recognize that part of the loop is even changing. I think we also recognize too that the student body of WashU probably keeps a large part of the loop open on restaurants and bars, because that's who's going through the loop if you're walking through on a Friday night. Gregory and I have been working with the LSBD and the East Loop SID, which is a totally different group, governed totally differently, funded totally differently, trying to find ways that we can work together. Because I think many folks know that several years ago, there was a rather bitter divide between the two, and we are now bringing them back together slowly but surely. Long story short on that is, I do think, and I've mentioned to you guys casually, that as far as land goes, we still, as the city, are one of the largest landowners in the loop because of the parking lots. And I think that we owe it to ourselves to continue to have a discussion about the purpose and the roles of the parking lots, because retail has changed and density in that area may be what is needed. The loop, the East Loop rents, by the way, are still much less than ours in the West. And the East Loop SID wants to work with us, but also has a desire to move further east, also to connect with the Maker District. Maker District. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I don't know how this plays out, but I think we all know the loop is changing. We all, clearly the loop has changed and continues to change. We're going to have, is it 360 new units coming on pretty soon with the local coming up? With that being said, I think that if anything, I could see the EDRST getting a request for some type of visioning work or consultant work for what's the next chapter of the loop look like, and then what role do we play, particularly with the parking lot and its role and other things. So I just sense that there's going to be a greater interaction with the EDRST on some of these funds for the loop to regain its shine, if you will. That was very long-winded. I apologize. Are there questions? I think Gregory and I have been the most involved, but clearly we want everybody's input on this. There's just very little we can do. Cicero still remains vacant. There's some discussion of possibly breaking Cicero's into a few different spots. Again, we don't control that. That's a private party that owns that. I do think that most of the office space in the Loop, though, the ones on the 2, 3, and 4 floors, I think that's all pretty much taken. We have had some interest in our city-owned building lately that we're currently using for storage while the remodels are being done. So we'll see how that moves forward. But you guys all know we still have too many vacancies in the Loop. Dick Blick, you're right there on the edge, and what happens with that one? So comments or questions about the Loop or anything you'd like to share? Mr. Fuller.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. Is there, and if this is private information, I don't need to know it, but is there any commitment to the businesses that will be with the new apartment building, the Syntax project? That's Syntax.
What about Subtext?
Subtext. Are there any commitments to the businesses that, as that is built on that south side? It's my understanding that the first floor will all be businesses. Have any businesses committed at this point?
I do not know that they do, but also I'm going to put some bookends on what you said. The first floor is not going to be a lot of residential, except for where I'll call them the townhomes. Are there some townhomes that come down? But the first floor is going to have, I believe, it's going to have some open area for the building and some retail. But I don't picture it being an expansive amount of retail. I would recommend use the word some, because we were pretty clear that we needed to have some activity in that building to keep people moving further west. But just so you know, if you're a tourist coming through there, there's going to be a little break in commercial activity in that building as you're walking west. Does that make sense, Dennis?
Yes.
Okay. But there is, to the best of my knowledge, there's no commitment yet for tenants there. Yeah, they've not shared that with us. And the hotel construction, as you know, is moving along pretty well. You know, one of the things that we haven't really talked much about, and I won't take this too far, is with Olive doing what Olive is doing, and then you've got the Loop. And Kingsland may see more action too. I mean, which could be a good thing for us. And remember, we do still have the street beside parking lot number 4, which is seldom used, which is more land as well. So, Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. When Wash U purchased the properties from Joe, I think there was a commitment to maintain it as commercial and retail spaces. I don't know if there was a duration articulated for that in perpetuity or what. I can't recall, but do we still feel good about them maintaining that commitment, at least in the near term?
Yeah, I put that that agreement about where I do the stars on the Walk of Fame, that we have an agreement to maintain the stars on the Walk of Fame because Frank Ohlendorf and Joe Edwards shook hands 40 years ago. And we're okay with that, but that's literally, there's no other agreement out there. With Wash U and Mr. Edwards, I believe that Wash U has committed to stay first floor retail and commercial. I think they're probably one of the better landlords now as far as maintenance and upkeep on their buildings, which I think is what we expected. I do think the one question I would ask of somebody in this room, I don't know whether Keith is here or not, but I always ask this question in honor of our dear friend Paulette, and that is, are they still paying property taxes on the first floor? Because they committed that they would pay property taxes on anything that is commercial activity, and no one usually pays that until we ask and say, have they paid it? So just in honor of Paulette, I'd like to know if they're still paying it. But they, Stacey, to the best of my knowledge, there's nothing that would prohibit them from not doing it. I just think they have other fish to fry. And I think they've also got a significant investment in the Loop, and their students keep coming. I think you're going to continue to see the Loop become far more international, clearly. At least that's what I would see. Steve.
Just to dovetail with what Councilman Clay was saying and his earlier comments and the code update. I think when that sale went through, there were some discussions about changing some of our codes that would have related to that area. And I wondered if any of those were made to help tighten up. I think it was dormitories and housing issues. I think Jeff Hales had mentioned that. I just didn't know if that ever moved forward.
Premier, Councilmember McMahon, we have not created a proposed ordinance for you. I would suspect this may end up getting wrapped up into the zoning code update, which seems reasonable to me. But at this point, no, we haven't made any changes.
Any other questions or comments regarding the loop? Hearing none, we will go to... Oh, I'm sorry.
I just... Speaking of our own codes and also ordinances, do you think anything that we... Like, I was just having a discussion about, like, our liquor law license. Like, do we have anything that kind of impedes our businesses? Like... gets in the way that maybe is more bureaucratic or cumbersome and that we could make it easier for businesses, not easier in the sense of letting them get away with things, but maybe just things that don't really add value.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Brenner, we have not heard from the business community that our processes delay their construction going through our going through the entitlement process at this point, at least, but something that certainly if we did begin to hear that there are problems that we would take a very close look at. We're pretty nimble. We use contract labor when appropriate to do so. We try to expedite things very quickly, and we just have not had that as a concern expressed. But yeah, we'll continue to keep an eye out on it.
Frankly, it may be some of us that hear those concerns. So if you do hear those complaints, it's probably good to pass those on to Gregory or to whomever. I mean, I think we all get the contractor complaints every now and then about some inspection that is something. But I think you also, everybody here recognizes that those rules were put in a long time ago and helped the U-City housing stock stay the way that it is. So that's the double-edged sword every time that comes up. All right, next one is... director vacancies.
There are two.
Oh, go ahead. If I have to kick it off, I just wanted an update on it. And as to parks, I just want to know if we did, I know we had difficulty hiring the last go round, finding a parks director. And if we've identified any difficulties that why we weren't able to attract someone, if that's been part of the process so far, that's really all I was asking about.
We contracted with the MGT. To assist us with getting candidates for both the parks director as well as the planning and zoning director. And I've asked Brooke to come forward and provide you with a brief update on both of those positions. Ms. Shar?
Yes, thank you. So for the director of parks, recreation, and public areas maintenance, we have scheduled those interviews for January. So we went with the recruiting firm and they did a pre-screen for us. We actually got a great, great selection of candidates this time. You are correct, Councilmember McMahon, in that last time when we did the search, it was still really an employees market. And so we did not get the caliber of employees that we got this go round. So I am very excited about the five candidates that we will be interviewing. For the director of planning and zoning, we are actually interviewing this month. We have six great candidates that we scheduled. I'm confusing them. I think we scheduled them for December 4th and 5th of this, next month. I'm already in December. So very excited about them as well. Not as many as we got for the Parks and Rec, but the six that we have are very qualified candidates. So I think we will find one out of the group that we have.
If I could add on to Brooke's statement, we are trying to expedite our process this time. We recognize through previous recruitments that quality people aren't going to be available that long. And so we're trying to move very quickly to fill those positions.
We good, Steve? Good? Yeah, yep. Thank you. All right. Councilmember Brenner.
I think I touched a little bit about this earlier. We were talking about capital improvements, and I have a couple questions. I didn't know if they were going to be answered earlier or not, but one was, how often do we do kind of a review of systems, like building needs systems, and do we ever consult with an outside company to do that, like to look at our buildings to see what, like, the most important thing to get done first is, kind of thing, you know? And do we have, like, how do we make a decision on what's the important capital improvement to work on with the money constraints? Do we have any ranking systems? Do we, and how do we go about finding what those projects are? It's just sort of a general sense. I've been trying to get a good handle on that. So it's like a couple tiered question. So do we ever consult outside to look, review everything? And then how do we kind of rank and decide what's important within our budget? You know, that type of thing. So,
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Brenner, there was a comprehensive review of all buildings that occurred. This is probably 9 years ago, I think right before I started, where they identified all of the work that needs to occur in each particular public building that we own. At the time, the mayor and council, they didn't provide any sort of ranking system. They simply said, here are the problems that each of these buildings have. At the time, it was clear that the priority was public safety because they were in trailers. And their location in within the city, within City Hall, had been condemned. And so most of the resources that were available at the time went towards those two projects, one, the annex, and then secondly, the Trinity Building. I believe now you're in a position to at least begin to identify what's the next projects that we'll work on. We will once again review that document that was prepared for us, include those projects that we believe are the highest priority in the proposed capital improvement program. And then the mayor and council will advise us to whether, as to whether they agree with those priorities that we're setting, or whether they, you as a council, want to shift those priorities. So that's the process that that we go through. Each director has responsibility for their own particular building, not just the building, but in the case of park and recreation, the commission is involved in identifying capital needs within the various parks that exist. So the capital improvement program is where we really identify proposed priorities for you and put forward those recommendations.
We good on that one? If I could, I just was sitting here and I want to go back to the triumvirate of Blaine and Dennis and Lisa on Olive. And though I don't know if I want to crack open this box too far, if we were talking about the service road behind the buildings at 8200, 8400, pick your number of the block, would that be an appropriate use just in that particular area for that group of people to create a SID for those retail businesses to help fund that road? Because am I missing that that's kind of what a SID does, and you would find out pretty quickly whether or not this was a priority for those businesses or not? Because that would mean that they would be charging a little bit extra to their customers to help pay for that road. Instead of it being the city going in and funding the road, it would be going to Lulu's and everybody along there. So, by the way, do you like this ad? Do you think this is a good idea? Maybe one of those things for you just to have as a discussion point, because that sort of you sort of separate the wheat from the chaff on that one as far as whether or not they're in it or not, because that sort of makes that business owner give a thumbs up or thumbs down to making that investment in that project before we. I mean, it's kind of like the cemetery on Canton. Never, if I, you know, we get lots of emails that the city should buy the land and make it into a park. That's a great idea because it's the city's money and no one else is going out for the money. And the folks who sold it, they're okay. Now we've got another park. But that's probably not the way that works. It'd be same way here. If the businesses considers to be enough of a concern, they'd be interested in probably putting a sit in. So that happened at Walgreens, as I recall, with the stoplight and things like that. So it's one of those things to kind of put in the back of your head. Councilmember Clay, did we already get this one taken care of or no?
I'll just add one component. Yes. And well, thank you, Mayor Crow. Yes. In large measure, but as it relates to, and this is more the vacancy piece we did, the zoning restrictions, as we go through this process of redoing our zoning, and we pay particular attention to Olive, because that it is, I certainly recognize it is far more expansive than some of the entertainment, for lack of a better term, districts I mentioned earlier, the Grove and even the Loop. It's a couple of miles. It's a big wide road. So it's harder to be boutique in that context. But having said that, I think we can use zoning and other tools, development tools, to make certain areas, again, more hospitable to certain types of businesses and inhospitable to others. And I also recognize with Olive, because of its length, they're going to need to be some amenities that aren't fun and exciting. You know, the Central West End can just have bars and hookah lounges and all kinds of fun stuff on there. Olive is far more expansive. You're going to need to have a laundromat on Olive somewhere, because that's an amenity folks are going to need in relative proximity. So I get that. But as we, to Councilmember McMahon's point, reference the comprehensive plan and the Third Ward revitalization plan, and as we go through the zoning process, the zoning reexamination, that we keep in mind, can we create areas within on Olive where we have certain things? It's probably more appropriate by markets at Olive to have the funner things and the things that are less necessities. You know, maybe that's how we think about it. So that's really my urging, is that we are very strategic in our zoning, particularly as it relates to Olive. The things we want, make hospitable. The things we don't want, make inhospitable. Understanding property owners can have wide latitude in what they can have in their properties, but how can we support and facilitate the things we want and the things we don't?
Councilmember Brenner. Okay. Anyone else on that topic? Hearing none, Councilmember Tiemann.
Honorable Mayor, thank you very much. I'm just going to take a very few seconds because there's not really that much to say. First, though, I do want to commend you and my honorable colleagues and our civil servants here, because this makes today the third consideration we'll have when it comes to green practices that's been on this work, plan, the sustainability plan, and the study of greenhouse inventories and greenhouse inventory, and now the solar panel ordinance. So I thank you and commend you, because I consider it, frankly, the most important issue of our time. To remind everybody, the solar panel ordinance was a non-binding ordinance to encourage new businesses to develop plans for solar panels, and whether they choose to do it or not, to then report to the Green Practices Commission. This is a work in progress right now. We are still discussing it among civil servants and should report out soon. As was suggested by my colleague, Councilmember McMahon, we need a clarification of some legal language on it. It is in the hands of our Steve, our senior planner right now, and should probably, we're expecting it to report out in February. That's it.
Okay, we have gone through the list. Unless there are other questions or comments from members of council, which I would tell you I'm very, very impressed with the speed with which everyone had their questions. Oh, I'm sorry, John, do you have more?
No, there's nothing more. I just want to say something, just 30 seconds. I'd like to remind us all that today is November the 22nd. Today was the day John Kennedy was shot. And in a time of increased political violence is even encouraged by some of the highest officials in our land. I think it is well that we pause. I'm not going to make anything of that, but I think it is well we pause for that sad event.
Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. For everybody here, I would welcome a motion for the University City Council to go into a closed session according to Missouri Revised Statute 610.021, legal actions, causes of action, or litigation involving public government or body or any confidential privileged communications between that government or body or its representatives or attorneys and individually identifiable personnel records, performance ratings, or records pertaining to employees. Is there such a motion? Motion made by Councilmember Thiemann, seconded by Councilmember Fuller. Is there discussion? Hearing none, Madam Clerk, can you shout out the roll?
Yes.
Aye.
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 Ms. Hobson?
Aye.
Aye.
Mayor Pro?
Aye. To all of you who have joined us in person, Pat, thank you. To those of you who joined us online, thank you. To our employees and directors, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend and a nice holiday.